Ngenjo Koan, Dogen Zenji, writes, firewood becomes ash. It doesn't turn into firewood again. But we should not hold to the view that the ash is after and the firewood is before. Know that firewood abides in its Dharma position as firewood, or we could say state of being firewood, and has its past and future. Though it has past and future, it cuts off past and future. Ash is in its Dharma position, its state of being as ash, and has its past and future. Just as this firewood, after it seems to become ash, does not again turn into firewood, so a person, after they die, does not return to life. Therefore, we do not say that life becomes death. Do not say birth becomes death. This is the established way of Buddha Dharma. For this reason, we say unborn. Life is unborn. Death does not become life. This is the established Buddha turning of the Dharma wheel. For this reason, we say undying. Life is a time unto itself. Death is a time unto itself. It is like winter and spring. We do not think that winter becomes spring, nor do we say that spring becomes summer. This is one of several places where Dogen Zenji elucidates, clarifies this matter of life, death, or this matter of this moment, because that's what he's saying. This moment is exactly this non-self Dharma moment. And in a sense, he's clarifying what you might call an ordinary view of some sort of permanent self, as some sort of ongoing permanence of all phenomena. Of any phenomena. As some of you know, fundamental points of Buddha's teaching, in fact, the earliest written record of Buddha's teaching, long before any of the sutra collections of the early schools of Buddhism were written down, comes from somewhere about 325 BCE, before Common Era, where essentially the Buddha's teaching is what we now call anattam anicca dukkha. Anicca means ongoing change or impermanence. Anatta means non-self or non-fixed permanent self. And that believing and holding otherwise leads to suffering in various ways. We have this in records from the Alexandrian Greek Empire, of around, as I said, 325 BCE. The earliest extant sutras that we have are several hundred years after that from the various schools. But this is before these early sutras were written down. This, in a way, is a very simple point, but it's also very difficult for us because we all take for granted some sort of continuance, permanence, whereas the Buddhist teaching is that there's instant, ongoing changing, we could say. But even that gives us an idea that there's something changing, rather that there's instants arising, passing. Some calculations would say more than 6 billion times a day in the so-called 24-hour period. Doesn't matter the number. So, Dogen wants us to clarify this point because it's fundamental to understanding Buddha's teaching and to understanding suffering and an end to suffering, which is the fundamental point. See, of course, body-mind is not two separate things, and there's no, as it says, continuance of life becoming something after death. In one sense, there's these two positions that Dogen and Buddha's teaching are attempting to clarify and, in one sense, you could say, counter. The first is that there's some sort of soul, spirit, something which continues, goes someplace and continues after death. The other is that everything ceases to exist. Whether it's the eternalism or the annihilationism or nihilism, neither of those are the Buddhist teaching. So, though there's definitely ongoing changing and cause and effect, there's nothing that goes from here to here. And yet there is cause-effect relatedness. Nevertheless, we think that we continue. The me this morning, the me with the stories about yesterday and last week, oh, that's me continuing now. Me continuing from last week, last month, and it's me gonna continue to the future. The same me. And on that basis, I can hold on to my upsets and beliefs and attachments about what happened to me before, what she did and he did, and create all sorts of trouble for myself or others. Create all sorts of wanting to gain and wanting to lose, or not wanting to lose. The point he says is, when he says unborn, is to make it clear that this moment life is the life of the Buddha, is your life, is unborn. Otherwise we think was born on such and such day, I'm so many years old, and when we say unborn, It's, if I use stinky words, it's the absolute reality of this moment, which is what we are, which is all that we encounter, moment by moment. This non-existing of an ongoing self is the delusion that justifies all sorts of trouble. And of course, this isn't saying that things exist, neither does it saying things don't exist, nor is it saying that they both exist and don't exist, nor neither are they existing and not existing. All of those sorts of attempts to fudge this moment into some sort of theory and build on that is what creates trouble for us. Nevertheless, we can use all of those provisionally in whatever way is appropriate. Then, use it, but not getting entangled in it, not believing it, not using it as a basis for greed and anger, not being confused. That's what's called illusion in the Buddhist sense of the term. Or if to say it the other way, there's no duration. There's arising, passing, arising, passing, arising, passing. In one sense, you could say science validates some of this, but it doesn't make a difference because that isn't what we're going for, because it's a matter of how do we see and experience this life of dharmas are empty, if I say it another way, impermanent. That's exactly Buddha's awakening. That's what makes possible to say all beings of the great earth together manifest, awaken to this way. See? That cuts off the justifications for all sorts of blaming about what he did to me yesterday and what she did last week. Dogen, in another fascicle called Birth Death, clarifies this in an even more straightforward way. He says, he writes, in Genjo Koan, and I say this, I would say writes because Dogen specifically wrote that for someone. In Shoji, Birth Death, he delivered it as a talk and then it was written down. So in Birth Death, Dogen says, it is a mistake to suppose that birth turns into death. Birth is a phase, or life is a phase that is an entire period of itself with its own past future. For this reason, in Buddha Dharma, birth is understood as no birth. No birth because it's not part of a continuum. It's this moment which has so-called past future in as this moment. But then as it disappears, so to speak, that so-called past future also disappears. And yet, moment, moment, arising, passing, if I say it in that way. He says, death is a phase that is an entire period of itself with its own past future. For this reason, death is understood as no death. In birth, there's nothing but birth, and in death, there's nothing but death. Accordingly, and this is the important point, when birth comes, when this moment arises, face and actualize this moment birth, this moment life. See, this is the important point. And when death comes, face and actualize death. Don't avoid them or desire them. Birth, death is the life of Buddha. If you try to exclude it, you will lose the life of Buddha. If you cling to it, try to remain in it, you will also lose the life. And what remains will be the mere form. Only when you don't dislike birth and death, or long for them, do you enter Buddha's mind. However, don't analyze it or try to elaborate on it. Just set your body and mind, forget about them. Set aside your body and mind, forget about them. And throw yourself into the Buddha house. Then all is done by Buddha. All is done by your Buddha life. Then you are free from birth and death and become a Buddha without effort or calculation. So, in a way, this is a lot that's said in there, but the point is coming together always to the same, this moment, be this moment as the whole universe, which is who you are. Not some little body, mind in here. Then you can live freely in terms of the circumstances that arise. That's the Buddha's teaching. Then there's not holding on to gaining or losing or holding on to all sorts of past stories of what I was, what I will be, nor future fears. Future fears of I am going to lose this, or future theories of I will gain this in a future life. Now, this doesn't negate any kinds of teachings about in different schools of Buddhism or non-Buddhism of karma or transmigration or any of that. Well, actually, I don't know if we would want to say transmigration. Reincarnation would be a better word. Because transmigration is an idea that there's something that's migrating, whereas reincarnation is the sense of something arising as a result of forces. What these forces are, how they work, is a different matter. So, now the point of talking about this is not so that we get theories about birth or death, but rather so that we can live fully in this present moment, so that we don't buy into the usual delusions about existence past and justifications for holding on to or fearing all sorts of things. Becoming upset about all sorts of old debts. As so-called past arises right now, that's where we get to take care of it. Because this moment has its past and future. Taking care of it right now manifests according to circumstances. In one sense, this points to that right now is, you might say, of almost no duration in the sense that we count. And yet, it's definitely right now where we have full responsibility for the whole universe, and therefore can take good care of the whole universe, and don't have to be bound by our resentments about so-called past, about resentments about that we want to do in so-called future. And this is both, you could say, a theory of human existence and existence of the whole universe. Some of this there are hints of, if we want to say that, in modern physics. Certainly in classical thinking, there's others in the Hellenistic and Roman world that have articulated something similar to this. Our Latin expert is not in the room at the moment, so I think there's a work by Lucretius on the nature of things that has to do with, I might be wrong, so don't, that has to do with the ongoing changing of phenomena. But I might be wrong, so I'll leave that aside. So, in a way, this is very simple, and yet in a way, this is very radical. Radical for us, because we, all of us humans, not humans necessarily just here, but humans in Buddha's time, in 400, 500 BCE, in China, in the Tang and Sung dynasty, in Japan, in Dogen's time, in all sorts of different cultures, are very easily buy into this idea of permanent self, of some sort of permanence and continuing self, ego. And there's always the counter which challenges that, and which is exactly what Dogen's doing, but challenges it not for the sake of theory, but for the sake of enabling us to live fully in order to be able to face fully this fear of death, which I brought up yesterday. Face fully this fear of death that, in one sense, shadows life in all sorts of ways. Shadows life and gives power to ego, gives power to self-centeredness when believed, gives power to all sorts of greed and anger and harming and suffering. So, I know some of these points might either be not clear or might be too theoretical. So maybe we can clarify them and make them more immediate. So that we can be wholly, fully in this non-attachment life, non-attached to birth, non-attached to death, and therefore able to compassionately respond to circumstances of all the beings that are our life, that are our life moment as we encounter them. That's all they are, because all we encounter is our life moment of this moment. Of this moment. This our life moment, if we want to say, this absolute life, which is this moment. Okay, I'll stop now and see if you have something that you want to bring up, which I can hopefully skillfully address. You can change your positions if you wish. One second.
Sure. Tell her she can come back.
Yes.
So, my wife, Karen, whenever she confronts something that she thinks is mind-boggling or even ridiculous, she just says, firewood becomes ash. Over and over again. Firewood becomes ash, firewood becomes ash. Because it's, you know, it just stands in for something that, for her, that just passes by her reasoning about life.
Yes.
And at first, when I read that to her, she flew off the handle and, you know, became really angry about it.
Oh, good.
Yeah, it was great, trust me. Not so much. And why do you waste your time with this idiocy? And are you, you're just showing off? And I said, I don't get it either, you know. But there's one thing that I always love about this is when Dogen says, we don't believe that spring becomes summer. Now, I don't know if that's a rhetorical sort of device, because I actually do think that. And I always go, we don't? I think spring becomes summer. Absolutely. That's my experience of now it's becoming spring. That's how I talk about it and how I think about it.
It's fine to talk about it that way. But what is the it that's becoming spring? I mean, he does say, we don't think that winter becomes spring.
Yeah, I do. All the time.
And what is this winter? See, you're right. That's an ordinary way of thinking. And it's an ordinary way, if we hold on to it and don't see what we're saying, of getting into all sorts of trouble.
How is that?
Well, how come this winter is so cold? Last winter wasn't so cold. How come this person is not nice to me today? Last time, they were such and such. That makes us miss this moment. It makes us believe this story of a permanence, whether a permanence of so-called myself or a permanence of so-called others, and we're unwilling to embrace this moment as it is without our attachment about how I like, want it to be, how it should be, how it was.
But it just certainly, I mean, I agree with Steve, it certainly seems like winter becomes spring, and spring becomes...
And it seems like firewood becomes ash. If you were to do a scientific analysis, firewood is and ash are not... Firewood doesn't become ash. A live person doesn't become a dead person. The person ceases each moment, much less when they so-called die. The body-mind person of the moment breathing in is and breathing out and then dying is not the person that is this corpse right here. Everything else is our preconceptions, our held on to conceptions. It's our stories about how it is and should be, and therefore a basis of missing this ongoing, changing non-self, believing that the person is somehow inside this bag of bones and skin and this whirling emotion thought, believing that there's some sort of substance of that and therefore a justification to be angry or upset or all sorts of other things, liking it, wanting it, celebrating some accomplishment of it. It's, if we say it, it results in suffering and harming. Now, in Buddhist time, there was no way to scientifically investigate that very much, except you could see a corpse and you could see a non-corpse. So you could tell there was a difference between the two, and that one wasn't the one that yesterday was walking around breathing and today, so to speak, is a corpse. You can see, well, it changed, right? Now, if we use advanced, so to speak, scientific methods, we could see change going on all the time. We could see the constant motion of all sorts of particles on all sorts of levels, whether in terms of brain functions or in terms of so-called other functions. Of course, our theories about what's what, this is physical, this is mental, there's another whole realm to explore. But the point is that it's our ideas about it that result in problems. And the Buddha's awakening is awakening to the fact that it's not that way. Now, you don't have to believe it.
It's not that way.
It is not that way. There isn't a continuous, permanent, separate self or separate body, mind, person that was born, that went from childhood to adulthood to... Remember, the Buddha started practice because he encountered suffering. He encountered it in terms of sickness, old age, death. He encountered those and said, well, those are terrible. Let's simplify it. So I need to practice. Encountered someone who was practicing in order to not be bound by our usual view of those. Because our usual view of those leads us sometimes, even if you live in a very rich environment and have lots of wealth and ability, still leads us to times when we're suffering because we don't get what we want, or what we want changes, or we're not with whom we want, or with whom we don't want to be with, or etc., etc. That's what the Buddha is addressing. And he's saying that he awakens to the fact that that view of what our life and death are is what creates the problem. That's what Dogen is saying. It's that view that birth, life is born, and death is ending. Both of those are inaccurate. That's Buddha's awakening. That's why we say unborn and undying. Unborn means that it's not something that happened. It's right now is unborn. Right now is undying. Death is undying. That's why he says, when death comes, embrace death. Death is life of the Buddha. Birth is life of the Buddha. That exactly, in the death moment, is the life of the Buddha. Of course, I should cover my mouth rather than say Buddha. I should wash my mouth out. I should encourage you to wash your ears out, because otherwise we get ideas of what it is. As you know, you studied in Hindu tradition. In Hindu tradition, they often use the word, in place of the ego, they use words like true self. So do they do in Buddhism. But it's very easy to turn the self into another idea that poisons us. Doesn't matter what, you're very easy to even turn words like, emptiness into another idea. Use words like absolute. Now, of course, that's English. We're translating and speaking English. So already we're in trouble. Because English, like most languages, is dualistic. And we tend to reify words and concepts. But that isn't the language's problem. That's what we humans do. Doing that, we want to create permanence. And we don't want to live as ongoing, changing non-self. We don't want to awaken to that. And everything that we do from beginning to end has a little bit of resisting that in it. Resisting being just this moment. Being just this moment of the whole universe. Being born with the whole universe and dying with the whole universe, moment by moment by moment by moment. It's as if we want to insist, oh yeah, there's the sun that's always shining, rather than recognizing that the sun is constant explosions, 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 none of which have any permanence. They're just constant explosions. That's what our whole life is. But we don't have to figure out the mechanism. But we can see.
But doesn't that sound very theoretical?
That's why we can see the consequences of not living that way. We can see the consequences of living, he did that to me. She did that to me last week. I've got to be angry because I didn't get dot, 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 dot. He got dot, 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 dot. Therefore, we can see the consequences of that. So don't worry about the theory. The point is here is to enable us to live fully as who we are. And what Dogen is saying, he says, there's a simple way to be a Buddha. Refrain from unwholesome actions, not attached to birth, death, compassionate towards all beings. He has more there, but that's enough. Not excluding or desiring any particular things, not designing thoughts or worries. Then you'll be a Buddha. You don't have to seek anything else. This is what Dogen says in this fascicle, birth, death. The problem isn't the words birth, death. It's the delusions that result from what we believe about life and death. The delusions that we allow ourselves so that we hold on to old resentments. We act out future resentments or future entanglements or future self-centeredness or present self-centeredness or stories about others versus self. That's the clear problem that you want to address. That's what, in a sense, being free, birth and death. Doesn't mean going anywhere else. Dogen says if you look for birth, Buddha outside birth, death, it's like looking for the Big Dipper, You know, the Big Dipper is North Star while you're facing south. He uses a very obvious example that anyone lived in a society where the night sky was very bright because they didn't have electricity, etc., all over. Everyone would know that if you want to look for the Big Dipper, you don't look to the south. In the northern hemisphere, obviously. In the southern hemisphere, it's a different thing. That's very simple. If you're looking for Buddha outside of birth, death, so he's not telling you that it's somewhere else. At the same time, he says, because Buddha is in birth, death, there is no birth, death. Not the way we think of it. In other words, there's not a basis of fearing and believing and justifying harming and suffering. So, birth, death is nirvana. Nothing else, no place else. But nirvana means not avoiding birth, not avoiding death, not avoiding circumstances, embracing this moment as is. Then, you know who you are. Who you are is this moment. And yet, it's not this story of past, future, or present. No. That's why in the Diamond Sutra, the Buddha says, the Tathagata says, like a bubble and a dewdrop and a flash of lightning, thus should you consider this. So a flash of lightning, come gone, come gone. That's how you consider it. Therefore, you can live it without getting caught in self-centered dream. Only suffering. It's the simple point. We say it every day. If you sit here every day, caught in self-centered dream. But I'm talking too much. Gikai.
If I may...
Sure.
Set up a metaphor to... I'm not completely satisfied with... Although I've heard you speak about this one before, like, I think people are pointing to it. It's hard to really get it all the way.
Yes.
And I know we all understand the utility, but the meaning of what he's saying is hard to really... So, let's say this is our Zen Center building, and our cognitive minds notice differences. So that's what we think is, on Prospect and Green, this building, I know what it looks like. Let's say, over time, we took every piece of this apart, one piece at a time, and replaced it with another piece. And then, 10 years from now, there was not one piece that was the original piece. But still we'd say, that's our Zen Center, I know our Zen Center.
Yeah.
That would be foolish for you to say that's not our Zen Center.
Yeah.
Even though it's completely different, it's still because we notice the differences, we speak and think in the differences, that form is clearly Zen Center.
Right.
So
let's take it one step further. If I get upset that this new form happens to have a bad virus on that part of the form, and all of a sudden, that's very weak. But that's not supposed to be. The Zen Center's ceiling isn't supposed to be weak over there. And that part is rotting away. And this part can't stand up anymore. You can't stand on it because it's too weak. How did it change? What happened? So, in one sense, we use the name Zen Center. Fine. Zen Center is a perfectly good name. Just don't become stuck on the name. That's what he says. It's the stuckness on the name. Otherwise, use it. Exists, fine. Doesn't exist, fine. Neither exists nor doesn't exist, fine. Both exists and doesn't exist, fine. just don't get stuck on them. If you don't see that them as what they are, constructs that can arise and pass, that can be used according to circumstances, then you get into trouble because they become justification for saying, we got the best Zen center in Champaign. Oh, they've got a better Zen center. You know, several blocks over there's this Vietnamese Buddhist temple, and they've got this brand newly built Buddhist temple. Look how wonderful they are, and they have a Zen center there. Oh, and they've got so many people coming, and we don't have as many as them. And right there. That's what we do. I mean, it's an exaggeration, but that's becoming attached to birth, death. That's becoming attached to this moment, the way the universe manifests. Because we compare it. Because this moment includes so-called memories. That's including a before and after. This moment includes memories of before and after. That's just part of this cause and effect. Being human means there's memories as part of being human. It's not some sort of blank slate. Fine. But if we don't attach and get entangled in our memories, then we don't cause suffering because of them. If we get attached and entangled in them, then we cause suffering for ourselves and others. Oh, I used to be so strong, and now look how weak I am. I could only do this. I could only do that. Oh, it's so terrible. Isn't it terrible that how I am right now? Then right now becomes a terrible time as opposed to just this moment. I had such wonderful deep samadhi yesterday. Oh, today my mind is so agitated. Oh, this is bad, this is bad. So we create more bad. But we do it with people too. Not just so-called ourselves. We do it about other people. He was nasty to me last week. Therefore, I need to hate him today, or whatever else, and hold on to those. That's what this is all addressing. This Dogen is talking this way to try to elucidate a very simple point, the very point caught in self-centered dream. But we say it all the time, and it still doesn't. So sometimes we have to say something a little more elaborate and a little more shocking, especially about death. Because death is that secret fear that underlies a lot of other fears in our life and other reactions. Because we have this other secret belief of I'm permanent. I'm going to be the exception, you know that. The rest of you might die, but I'm not. One of my teachers, Soen Akagawa Roshi, said, and I'll sort of, maybe, I don't know if I'll get it exactly right. He says, I rarely or almost never see someone on whose faiths I can see, today I could die, or today I will die. In other words, people don't live with that.
Face, is that what you said?
Yes, face. In other words, in their way of being at this moment, the way we face this moment is facing it with today is could be my death day. And therefore living as this is the whole of my life. That's what he was saying. I'm sure I got at least 50, maybe 70 years more. You know, so I'm going to, you know, have a 140th birthday too. There are some traditions where they say that if you reflect on your day of death, you'll be able to live and practice in a appropriate, skillful way. So therefore, you should each day reflect on or meditate or contemplate your day of death. In some ways, that's like what Soen is saying. See, it's always right here. This moment is the whole of our universe life. And this moment. And I can't do it fast enough. We can't even imagine. I mean, as I said, in Buddhist tradition, they talk about 6 billion moments in 24 hours. There's various ways of talking about thought moments, how many thought moments there are in a minute, an hour, a day. And scientifically, it's possible to find numbers like that. But those are meaningless to us. So we don't have to deal with those except as an encouragement, as a counter to our tendency to go in the other direction, to want to hold on to our stories about the past and become ego involved and tangled in them to justify all sorts of self and other harming, self-suffering, to want to hold on to our stories about the future and use that as justification for making trouble and for missing this moment, this moment, this moment, this moment. Because I want to plan next week. So I don't have time to be here now. I have to plan next week. You know, if I don't plan next week, today, now, who knows what will be. But notice that happens not because we consciously decide it, but because it's the cause and effect of habits arising right now. And when the habit arises, that's our this moment practice opportunity of letting go of entangling, letting go of believing, which keeps us from calling being this true name that we are, this true life that we are, being the Buddha that we are. That's what Dogen says. Not attached to birth, death. Compassionate towards others. Yes.
This phrase or word, unborn.
Yes.
If something is born, I'm trying to put in my words what something unborn means. If something is born, does that mean that something has come into existence?
Yes.
Completely separate from everything around it that was never there before.
And it means it has a continuous existence from 19 whatever to now. So sometimes some people translate that word as unborn. I was going to look other, unborn most people here translate it. Some people say no birth or non-birth. Those are just, remember, that's translating it into English. And they're trying to find a word. So non-born, non-birth. The point is to counter the tendency to believe that this story about this life, just like undying, is to counter the story of that we have about death, whatever it is. Now, we think we know what life is. We know, hopefully, that our suppositions about death are just that, suppositions that we don't really know, but we have suppositions.
So then, I guess the next thing I wonder is that, and maybe this is just obvious, but the way that we think it is is because of what we see. Right? When you give birth to a child, there was no child there, and now there's a child. And it looks like something new is coming to the world. Even though, at some level, you know that that new thing is the combination of something else, of the mother and the father. Or when someone dies,
No. But wait. I want to stop there because something new came into the world this moment. But then you can say that this new thing is continuing in the world. See, that's when you say it was born,
right,
because you believe this same thing was at 1 day old, at 2 days old, and 3 days old. So that's the, what they're countering. It's not the that birth doesn't exist as birth. Birth is birthing, but birthing is unborn. And so that's why you could use the word life, but it's the word that they that's used. So, and it's the same with that. If we want to keep saying this person was born on such and such day, and therefore it's this same person who's here now, that's where they're going to address and say it's unborn. If you want to say that this same person is going to die, and then that person will be, that's why they say that's undying. The point is not is to counter our to use these words is to counter our usual tendencies, and the tendencies are just tendencies, no big deal, except that they become a basis for suffering and harming. That's the point. And the point isn't that you have to believe any of this. The point is this is an incentive to not do what causes suffering and to continue to practice so that you can awaken for yourself to who and what you are. The whole point of this is to awaken for yourself. You have to go verify it. Don't believe anything I say. I always say that. Don't believe, don't hold on to anything I say. It's fine. Unless you want to insist. You know what? We're winter becoming spring now. Then you miss even this spring moment. Because you still got this story. There's this thing called winter becoming spring, as opposed to, it's freezing out there right now. Isn't the sun wonderful? Does that? The whole point of me talking here is not for you to have any new theories about anything. You don't have to remember any of this, even though, as Monshin says, this phrase, winter becomes spring, is something he's picked up before or mentioned before, or that spring doesn't become summer. Nevertheless, if there's something here that resonates to you with your practice, with clarifying where and how suffering arises. See, in a way, when we do Gatha of Atonement, we're addressing this too. We're addressing it to encourage us in terms of right now. Not holding on to all harmful actions ever committed by me, to me, past, from beginningless greed, anger, and ignorance. Beginningless. See, there it is, beginningless. It's not, it didn't start when we were born, it didn't, who knows where. It doesn't make a difference because it comes together now. Beginningless means it comes together right now. It comes together when it comes together. We don't have to go look for the source, even though, as Dogen says, it has its own past and future right now. So, it's not to negate that, oh yeah, oh, my birthday's coming up. Yeah, I know, I have a birthday on at such and such. And that's just past and future right now. I've got a plane ticket for tomorrow. That's the past and future right now. I know this is not so easy because this is, as we say, life, death are fundamental matters, are supreme importance. They're of supreme importance because they run much of our functioning and responding to circumstances. And they run it in ways that are not skillful, but that instead lead to harming and suffering. They keep us, if we misconstrue it, they keep us from embracing the present moment, from being the Buddha that we are, from living the nirvana that we are. That's the point. But any last comments or questions? One. Go ahead. Only one. I didn't miss anyone else, right?
I'm just trying to, would you say then that this saying firewood doesn't become ash?
Yes.
Is like me not wanting to make the first move with my sister, like not wanting to email my sister because she always thinks that I'm the one that's to blame, and she's been so horrible to me. It's like that?
Well, you certainly are holding on to that story right now in the way you describe it. And you're saying, on that basis, I shouldn't email her. So, we don't have to go to anything firewood.
Firewood becomes ash.
Well, you're certainly saying that what she's always done, the story that she's always done such and such, is a justification for right now being angry at her.
Right. But I'm just trying to see that, yeah.
Well, that's believing that right now is based on the truth of this story back then, that I was harmed back then when I was such and such and she was such and such.
Mm-hmm.
And if that's the basis of how we live, then that's caught in self-centered dream. Dream. Notice the word that's used by that.
Yeah, I understand.
And I just hope fire would become don't worry about. Well, it's because we all. It's so easy to assume firewood becomes ash. And we don't see that we're building a story based on that. Just like you're building a story. How I should act now is based on what my sister did to me last year and 10 years ago and 20 years ago, and when we were little children, she was doing that then, I remember. And therefore, I'm not going to email her now, and I'm going to keep being angry. And what do we get from that? What's the consequences? You can go the other direction. You could ask, what would happen if, despite this story that I have right now, I emailed her? Would I be less? I mean, after all, you must want to email her. If you don't want to email her for some reason, then that's fine. But if you're saying, I'm not going to allow myself to email her, despite the fact I want to talk to her, because I have this other story that... Just hold it on that circumstance, on that basis. Forget about firewood, forget about ash.
Well,
Dogen uses it as an analogy to say, look, firewood doesn't become ash. And ash doesn't become firewood again. It doesn't, you know, these things are just this moment. And if we hold on to the story that it's the same thing, we get into all sorts of trouble. The point is that we hold on to this story of an ongoing, continuous self. And if we hold on to that story, then it becomes justified that if she did this to me 10 years ago, then I'm justified now in being angry. In fact, I'm justified in being angry for 10 years. She did it, and you know, I'll hold on to it for another 10 years till I'm done with it. And what do we get? Now, that doesn't mean that you have to, you know, you might say, right now it's not appropriate to contact her because what she's going to do is call me and yell at me and maybe even beat someone up because of what I do. Then you say, okay, that's my skillful analysis and assumption about what's the best now. So maybe that's what's appropriate. But caught in self-centered dream is very clear. And that's self-centered means firewood becomes ash. Self-centered means I was born in such and such day and this happened to me, and as a result of that and that, therefore I'm going to... Of course, it's all based on the memory that I have of right now and all the memories that I don't have, which might arise some future time. In fact, I'm just reading a book. What's it called? Something Consciousness by Oliver Sacks. It's a posthumous book. And he talks about, he was saying that in his 60s and 70s, he started remembering things, experiences from his childhood and from his from his teenage years that he had never remembered up till then. And then he says he found it very interesting that some things that he was sure he was remembering, he later learned from an older brother that he wasn't even there at that event. That what had happened was they got a letter from someone who was there, another of their brothers, and he read the letter and he's now created this story that, based on the letter, that he was there. I mean, he goes through the examples more. I don't remember the name of the book. It's a new book by him. A new collection of some essays that he wrote, which I haven't read the whole thing, but I find very interesting his different point of view. And of course he's coming at it as a neurologist and a scientist, which is a different perspective. Okay. Thank you all. Please let go of anything that goes and make use of anything that resonates and that supports your practice. Thank you.